we are taking advantage of this last official class that we have before the break to do a quick review of the Jewish home, of the things, the concepts we've learned. Of course, because it's a review, we'll have to keep it short. Let's dedicate our learning tonight to Aliza Bat Paula. Her neshama should have an aliyah. We always begin our discussion of the Jewish home with enemy number one of the Jewish home. What's enemy number one? Doubt. Maybe she wasn't Mrs. Wright. Maybe he wasn't Mr. Wright. We discussed that this is the thing that plagues marriages, especially in our century, where people get married and they have this la-la view of how everything's going to flow and it's so beautiful. And then, biff, bam, boom, suddenly marriage is about work. And they say, well, maybe this wasn't the right decision. So everyone has that doubt. And we said it's mind over matter. A person has to decide after he's married, this is who I chose, this is right, and I have to make it work. There are challenges, there are difficulties. That's not a reason to break it up. I don't love her. Okay, you will love her. You have to have a long-winded view. You thought it would be different. Everyone thinks it will be different. You want it to be beautiful? Make it beautiful. Marriage is what you make of it. The fact that everyone gets engaged and they think that this is perfect and this is going to be beautiful, okay, everyone thinks that, and it's good to think that, but we have to be a little bit realistic and recognize that the beautiful marriages that you see today, well, they were worked on. That's how they got there. Everyone had their rough times. They might not tell you about it. A lot of parents do their children the disservice of describing their marriage as it was love at first sight and it's been beautiful and bliss ever since then. That's a lie. No one had it that way. Parents might like telling their kids that it was that way, but you guys have to, if your parents painted that picture to you, then you got to break out of it. Again, I just want to remind the disclaimer we said in the beginning of class. This class is post-marriage. Our dating series, it's a different class. We'll start it again, Bezach, next month. We'll have another dating series. It's time to do that again. We're talking about after marriage. After marriage, one cannot have doubt. And we quoted the story that no marriage could live up to that doubt. The second the person is in doubt, then there will be millions of things that are annoying. And every day, if one is keeping a list, they'll have a long list of things that are annoying and 20 reasons why we should break up. Once we're married, we don't keep lists. The attitude must be, this is it, and this is beautiful, and we will make this work. And as much as I say this, people come back with the same question. But it's so tough. This can't be how tough it is for other people. So just remember, you heard it here, an old man with no white hairs said it. Okay, maybe a little bit of white hairs. Okay, so enemy number one is doubt. And that enemy, we discussed, plagues people from the time of engagement. Sometimes it plagues people and they can't even get engaged. Some people never jump off the diving board. They spend their lives as bachelors. Well, maybe there's someone better out there. Doesn't work that way. Chazal tell us, after a person was married in Babylon, they'd have the custom, they'd ask him, Tza u motze. The verse says, U motze, ani mal mimavet et aisha, I find the woman to be more bitter than death. The other verse says, Matza isha matza tov. He who found a woman found what's good in life. So one verse says, Matza isha matza tov. The other verse says, U motze, ani mal mimavet. I'm finding her to be more bitter than death. So after a person was married, they'd ask him, are you matza? Have you found her to be the sweetest thing in life, or motze, you're finding her to be more bitter than death. Did you found or finding? Which one? So the question is, a day after his marriage, what does the guy know? What are they asking him? He knows, and that's a question you ask a guy in Sheva Brachas, how's married life doing? Is she more bitter than death? The answer is no. They were teaching him, you want your life to be sweet. If you enter the home every night and you say, Matzah Isha, I found one wife, I found the wife, if that's your attitude in marriage, matzah tov, then things will be sweet. If you're constantly motze, discovering, well, my neighbor's wife, she has breakfast ready for him. My other neighbor, she hangs out the laundry. She doesn't ask him to hang out the laundry. My brother never washes the floor for Shabbos. His wife does that. My other brother, his wife takes the kids to Gan. Why do I have to schlep the kids to Gan? If you're always looking and comparing, if you're motze, if you're still finding, so then you'll always find her to be more bitter than death. No one could live up to that comparison. So when they asked him the morning after marriage, what type of marriage is your marriage? They're asking, what type of husband are you? Are you a matzah? I found the chosen one. And now, therefore, it'll be sweet, the sweetest thing in life. Or are you motzeh? You're constantly finding, comparing, finding. What kind of wife is she? Testing. Then it'll be more bitter than death. So enemy number one, first rule is, enemy number one is doubt. And everyone has doubt, and it's a question of mind over matter. Do I let the doubt be present in my mind, or do I say, it's not the way I'm approaching it? This is right, now let me make it work. Let's see how it's going to work out. Anger. Anger is one of the greatest destructive forces within marriage. The first thing a person has to ask himself when he's angry is, who am I angry at and why am I angry? Did I have a bad day at work? Did I not have enough sleep last night? Do I have a toothache that's driving me crazy? Am I in the middle of a fast day? Would I be this angry if the circumstances were better? So very often the answer is, no, you wouldn't be this angry. Go take a nap. You'll wake up. You'll feel much better about life in your marriage. And we mentioned that there was a group of psychologists that did research. They took couples that they were dealing with, and they said, we think that the solution to your problems lies in more sleep. Add an hour and a half of sleep to your regimen, and then see how your marriage works. And close to 80% of the marriages didn't need any counseling after they got more sleep. We're all spending our lives with less than adequate sleep, and therefore we're on edge, we're uptight, and people get on our nerves, and we don't have patience, and we speak more abruptly, and it's reflective in all of our life, and in the person that we're closest to, the person who we're most intimate with, well, then that friction explodes. So whenever a person's angry, the first question should be, who are you angry at? Is your anger reflective of yourself or the other person? And a person could give a million reasons why he's angry, but deep down inside he should ask himself, if I had made the same mistake, would I be this upset? What's really driving my anger? Is the person really being fair? So a person will say, well, she knows I had a rough day. Why is she driving me crazy today? Wait a second. You're married to her. You're partners. That's life. Yeah, maybe you should have more patience for her. If it was your neighbor's wife that was knocking on the door, you'd answer her nicely. For her, you don't have patience because she's your wife. And we said, the rule is, don't treat her worse than you treat your neighbor's wife. Meaning sometimes, just ask yourself, if she was my neighbor's wife, would I have the gall to talk to her this way? We said that if a person knows that he has an issue with anger, it's something that a person should work on before marriage. Never can there be violence in a marriage, and if a person knows that that is a weakness that he has, then a person should work on it before he enters marriage. Sometimes violence is instigated by the woman. The woman can hit her husband, and then the husband says, she hit me first. So she smacks him, he socks her in the face. That's no excuse. Just because she started with something physical, it's wrong. And in women's minds, very often what they do, oh, I didn't, come on, I didn't really hit him. What I did isn't called hitting. A woman will very often go like, and then she'll say, I didn't hit you, come on, that you call that hitting? So he says, what do you mean? You lifted a hand on me, I lifted a hand on you, what do you want? You started. Doesn't work that way. Two wrongs don't make a right, and even if she lifted her hand first, walk out of the room, walk out of the house. You have no right to lift a hand back. That doesn't, what? You have to restrain yourself, and if you can't restrain yourself, walk out. There's no if she needs to be taught that that's wrong, okay, so then she has to be taught that. We all have things we have to learn. And we said, we all come from different places. We'll get to that in a second. But there's no room for violence in a home. Unfortunately, sometimes women feel like what they did isn't violence. So that's not right of them, but we have to understand where they're coming from. It's not right. But that still doesn't mean we could do something that's worse, and that is with responding with violence. A person has to control his anger. And a person should always ask himself, why am I talking this way? Is there a purpose, or am I venting my anger? 99% of the time, we're venting our anger. If we really want to attain something, then there's a way to achieve it. And the way to achieve it is not through anger. An intelligent person waits till he cools off, as we've seen numerous times throughout Mishlei. A fool expresses things when he's angry. And we mentioned the story about that person who, when he got upset, he would be silent. And his wife would say, what are you upset about? And he'd say, I'm upset because I have bad midos. So she'd say, no, you're not. You're upset at me. And he'd say, yes, I'm upset at you. But why am I upset at you? I'm upset at you because I haven't yet worked on myself enough. That's the truth. That's why I'm upset at you. You did something that upset me. But if I'd be big enough, it wouldn't upset me. So I have to work on myself. And that's a true response. The truth is that 99% of the time we're upset because we're little. The other person isn't necessarily in the right. So what's the reason we're upset? So anger is something that people have to work on. People have to work on, and it's a lifelong task. We discussed the Chafetz Chaim's attitude, that the Chafetz Chaim, when he saw himself getting angry, he'd go into the corner and start talking to himself, Yisrael Meir, what are you getting upset about? What are you getting upset about? Why do you think you're so big that you're entitled to get upset? Who do you think you are? Take it easy. Stop getting upset. The Chafetz Chaim was a Kohen, so he really had anger. And he had a wife. There are all kinds of stories where one of the stories goes that he built the sukkah. His wife came out after he built the sukkah and said, "Honey, why'd you build it there? Wouldn't it be better on the other side?" So he said, "Fine." He took apart the sukkah, went and built it on the other side. Now, this is the Chafetz Chaim. His time is valuable. He finished building it on the other side. His wife came out and said, "Honey, you know, you were right. It was better in the first place." What?
Why did you say something like he was a Kohen and he had anger? Was he even more angry?
That's what Chazal say, that Kohanim are more angry. Are you a Kohen? Are you a Kohen?
Well, the Kohen was my great-great-grandfather.
Okay. I assume you mean from your mother's side, right? Okay. So at any rate, yeah, Kohanim have a tendency to anger more quickly. It's something everyone has to work on, and we do have to control. It is something that can be very destructive within a marriage, and usually it stems from falsehood and pride. So it's something every person has to work on. And a person has to be true to himself and recognize that anger, the root of anger, is most often in ourselves, not in someone else. We discussed that marriage is eternal, and that message has to be overbearing. That message has to surpass any difficulty. The Gra that says, we say Avat Olam, we discuss Ava Rabba. We have two discussions of love between us and Hashem. There's eternal love, and then there are times that the love swells and ebbs like the tide, where our love changes depending on our behavior. But beyond all of these levels of love going up and down, at the end of the day, there's also an eternal love. And that has to be constant. That has to be understood within the marriage, that there's an eternal love, and that has to be ever present. Even when we don't feel it, we discuss that in marriage there are ups and downs and highs and lows, and that a low could last years, not only days or hours or weeks or months. There could be highs and lows within an hour, within a day, within a week, within a month, but highs and lows could also last for years. And we gave examples of that. And the marriage has to, we have to enter marriage with that perspective, that this is for life, even if there are years of lows. And we gave stories of families that have had very difficult hardships that caused great strains on their relationship. But at the end of the day, the attitude has to be Ahavat Olam. This is for life, this is eternal. And that is the message we have to give our spouse. We said the one time when, in my opinion, a husband can express anger, shouldn't be angry, but can express anger, is if there's ever a joke made about divorce. We said there's one word that never should appear in the language of a marriage, and that is divorce. We never discussed divorce. And we compared it to owning a gun. We said just like you don't threaten with a gun, you take out a gun when you're ready to shoot, so too divorce is not something to threaten or discuss. Divorce just doesn't exist within a marriage. And we gave a story about a couple that was married over 20 years and married off children, and then one time one of the spouses made a reference to divorce, and it hurt the other spouse so much that eventually it led to the divorce. We said it is something that does tremendous harm, just the mention of it. And if the wife says something even jokingly about divorce, or do you mean by when you say you can't, you got very upset with me over what I did, do you mean you want divorce? That's the one time when I think a husband should react harshly, because what he's saying to his wife is, don't even joke about that. God forbid. You're so precious to me, I don't even want to joke about dividing between me and you. I don't want to even make mention of such a thing. When the harsher he reacts, within reason, the more he's telling her, I love you, you're a part of my life, and I don't want to even consider having a life without you. And that is a message that has to be there. We discussed the importance of reiterating one's love and one's devotion, and that a wife could never hear enough times her husband's love for her, and a person has to find ways to express it. And the same thing is true from a wife towards her husband. We had a whole class, and we had a whole sheet that's on the web, about perspective within marriage. We discussed the wife that gave her husband a concoction and caused his death. Doctor said, we're never going to be able to cure you from this. That's it, it's over, honey. Did he divorce her? Did he hate her? Did he say, that's it, we're over? No, he stayed with her and they built the world together. Who was this? Adam and Eve, the first couple. She caused his untimely death, right? She gave him the forbidden fruit. We don't find he divorced her and said, I'll marry someone else. We don't find that he said, it's over, sweetie. What? There were other women around who his children married. No, Adam Arishan, quite the contrary, he complimented his wife afterwards. He saw the positive in his wife. Every person has positive and negative, every one of us. It's a question of perspective. So Adam, after that whole occurrence, He names his wife Chava, you're the mother of life. And we said it's always important to have perspective. Every person has their faults, every person has their weaknesses, and at any point in time you could focus on a person's weaknesses and say, what do I want to be married to him for? He doesn't brush his teeth, he doesn't wake up on time to minyan, he doesn't clean the house, he leaves his dirty socks next to the bed, when he flosses, he leaves the string lying around the bed. I asked him a million times to take out the garbage, he doesn't take out the garbage. By the time he takes out the garbage, it's 5 minutes after Shabbos, he doesn't make it on time. What kind of role model is he to the kids? Sometimes he shaves, sometimes he doesn't shave. What kind of person is this? I'm married to a monkey, it's a monkey in human form. Oh, yeah, okay, every person, if you look at him, you could put him down. You know the joke, the wife tells her husband, in the afterlife, this goes in Hebrew, because it doesn't translate into English. A cocoon in Hebrew is called the golem. So the wife tells her husband, in the afterlife, next life you're going to be a moth. So he says, why? So she says, because right now you're still a golem. So the next life you'll be a moth. You'll metamorphosize. Right now you're still a cocoon. The next life you'll evolve into a moth. Golem is also a person that has no form. It's like stupid. At any rate, back to perspective. We brought the example of the wife who tricked her husband, got him to make the mistake of his life, and that was Leah, who tricked together with her father. But at the end of the day, she tricked Yaakov into marrying him. We don't find that Yaakov divorced her. Quite the contrary, he built Am Yisrael with her. We brought a bunch of examples, a whole long series of examples from Tanakh. We brought the example of the wife who endangered her husband's biggest investment and could have made him lose everything, and they still were happily married. That was Sarah when she laughed at the angel's prophecy that they'd have a child. Abraham didn't know whether God would rescind that prophecy after she laughed at the prophecy. But no, they maintained marriage. They kept going. We brought a list of examples. You're welcome to hear the class or go online. We said the key to all of these examples is we have to know that in life there are tragedies and sometimes people are at fault. Sometimes it's the wife's fault. Sometimes it's the husband's fault. The husband can make a mistake and lose all of the family savings. The wife can make a mistake and God forbid there's an accident and a person could be hurt. And I'm giving small examples. These are examples from life. People do make mistakes and those mistakes have a price. And sometimes that price is huge. But we always have to know we also make mistakes. And even if we've warned the spouse a million times, how many times do they warn us a million times and we don't listen? So the wife left the gas on and then they walked back into the house and he turned on to light his cigarette and the whole house exploded and they both had third degree burns over most of their bodies and they were both in the hospital for 6 months. And at the end of the day, they're still married and happily married. Story of a true family. Yeah, okay, so the guy could spend his whole life saying, didn't I tell you to leave the gas off, not to leave something on the fire when we leave the house? But he doesn't, because life isn't about that. We all make mistakes. And those mistakes can sometimes have a very high price. But throughout Tanakh we find that the forefathers and the matriarchs, they made big mistakes too. David HaMelech made big mistakes too. And at the end of the day, we have to live with one another with the mistakes. That's not a reason to break up. We all make mistakes. And those mistakes come with the price and the perspective. Hi aita em kol chai. Adam doesn't say that Chava, she's the mother of death. He says she's the mother of life. She's the mother of our children. We said that before marriage, we look for the best match. After marriage, the perspective has to be what Chazal tell us. Rabbi Chiya had a wife who did everything to make his life miserable. Whatever he did, whatever he asked her, she did the opposite. He asked her for chon, she'd make him soup. He asked for soup, she'd make him chon. Everything he asked for, she did the opposite. He was learning with his son the verse, Umotzani ma'mi mavtet aisha, I find the woman to be more bitter than death. He said, like your mother. So they asked him, okay, then why do you stay married to her if she's like that? He said, Dayenu shem gadlot et banenu l'toham metzilot otanu min achet. They're bringing up the kids to Torah. We're leading a Torah lifestyle. They are educating the kids. We're living together as husband and wife. Those basic two things we have. So yeah, she makes my life miserable. She yells at me. Erev Shabbos is hell in my house. Yeah, everything is difficult. But at the end of the day, she's doing the minimum. We said, we don't look for that. Don't look for a wife that's going to make your life miserable. But once a person's married, and we gave stories, examples, this perspective can make a world of a difference. The minimum she's living up to. So, okay, she's living up to the minimum. Beyond that, we have to make it work. What happens if the wife says, I'm not going to mikvah. I'm not buying kosher. We're not leading a kosher Jewish family life. Consult with your local Orthodox rabbi. It's a problem. But once you have the minimum, everything else is nice. It's good. You have to have perspective. We walk into life with expectations that are unfair. Our expectations have to be, let's make it work. And we have to value what we get. What was Adam's sin? According to some of the commentaries, his sin was he didn't appreciate. He said to God, before she was around, you didn't find me sinning. She caused me to sin. She gave me from the fruit. Without her, I wouldn't have sinned. For that, he got punished. For eating from the fruit, he wouldn't have been punished. He didn't know he was eating from the forbidden fruit. She gave him, she said, look at this great fruit I found. He ate it. Okay, he said, whoa, wait, this is special. Then God comes to him and he says, it's all her fault. God says, wait a second. He says, look, you gave me a woman to take counsel with, right? Why'd you give me a woman? To listen to her. So I listened to her. God says, I give you a gift. You don't appreciate her. So for that, Adam got punished. Here we learn about man's eternal flaw, the flaw that we have to work on throughout our life. We take things for granted, especially our wives, and we are kfuyei tova, we lack appreciation. And this brings us to one of the primary needs within a marriage, and that is appreciation. When we get married, what we all have a yearning desire for, husbands and wife, is appreciation. And what we give least is appreciation. We'd sooner buy her a new car, a new mink coat, then tell her, honey, you're the best wife in the world. I am so gifted by God to have you as my wife. I'll give her the car. What do I express my love. Isn't that good? What's wrong? No. Two words are worth more than that car. The words that come with it. And we discussed that when we're giving a gift, what's more important than the gift is the wrapping. What's more important than the wrapping is the letter that comes with it. And us men are the exact opposite. We don't appreciate the letter. We don't appreciate the wrapping. We tear it open. We read it. Very nice. Very sweet. And we look at the gift. We're different in that way. But to women, what's said, and this has applications that Bezrat Shem and your Chatanim will discuss on a deeper level, but we have to know that the letter that comes with it and the speech that comes with it are critical. They are what mean the world to the woman. We discussed that we have a tendency when complimenting to distance it from the person. The food was delicious. The house looks beautiful. And when we criticize, we have a way of pinpointing it on the person. You drive me crazy. You wasted our money. The criticism is about you. The compliments are about the action, when it should be the exact opposite. When we compliment, we should say, you made an amazing dish tonight. You cleaned the house amazingly. The compliment should be focused on the person. And if we reach a point where, for whatever reason, we actually are legitimized in saying a piece of criticism, then we shouldn't say it. And if at the end of the day we will say it, then we still shouldn't say it. But if we will say it, we should distance it from the person. Like we brought the example of children when we toilet train them. So the first few times they have an accident, what do they say? My pants got wet. It came out. They don't say I made, no. It happened. What do children say when something spills? It spilled. It just happened. They distance it from themselves. We said the same thing. We have to know when we compliment to focus on the person and when we criticize to distance from the person. But we have a whole class on criticism. We'll get to that. We discussed that our perspective in marriage has to be long-winded and long-distance. Meaning we have to recognize that marriage is for life. Very often a person wants to react to something. He should have a long-term perspective. How important is this in the long term? So sometimes people take this the other way. They say, oy vey, if I don't react now, who knows what will happen with this? I got to snip it at the bud. That's wrong. It can sometimes be right, but more often than not, it's wrong. Most things are passing, and most issues can be resolved if you only compliment the positive. Instead of reacting to the negative, compliment the positive. And all too often, we're too busy doing the exact opposite. We discussed the importance of writing notes. We mentioned that couple that they're married now, I don't know, 20-something years. And he told me he hasn't missed a morning, so long as he's not overseas traveling. He hasn't missed a morning where he leaves his wife a cup of juice and toast and a note next to her cup of juice. They have grandchildren already. Every morning she has a note expressing his love from her husband. And we mentioned that couple that were married for over a decade. And then when they did gear, they got remarried. And he asked me what he should do. So we're making a long story short. I told him that he owes his wife Sheva Brachas. It's their first Jewish marriage. They have already 4 or 5 kids. Every day of Sheva Brachas, he should write her a note. And I think we said 2 notes a day. I don't remember the details. So he insisted he didn't know how to do it. And we gave examples of how you write a note. And then he did it. And he comes back then to Sheva Brachas. And I asked him how to go. She said, like a little girl. My wife's 45. I don't know how old she was. And every note I write her, she looks at it, she smiles, and she takes it. And I said, give it back. She says, no, you wrote me a note. What do you mean? I said, what do you need it for? She says, I'm gonna put it away. What do you mean? And she took it and hid it from me. He says, mamash like a little girl. I said, what does that tell you? He tells me, she's a little girl. I said, no, it doesn't tell you she's a little girl. It tells you that it means something to her, that the notes are important. You have to write her more notes. It's not enough just during Shev Brachos. Write her notes, expressing your love. We discussed that that is the easy way to her heart. Writing notes. It's important to write notes to express one's affection. Speech. We discussed that men in speech are goal-oriented. When we call, we have a purpose in mind. Our conversation could last 30 seconds. Hi, are we meeting tonight? Yeah, great, good. Kol tov, bye. End the conversation, right? What else do we have to talk about? Women, the exact opposite. The goal is to talk. What do you mean? The speech itself connotes connection. If you're talking to me, then you're connected to me. So first, hi, how are you? How are things? How was your day? How's school? Because speech is not goal-oriented. The goal is to talk. If we talk, we're connected. So our goal is to talk. Men get very annoyed. What's the point? What do you want to tell me? Very often a woman could say, I got to tell you something. And then the guy sits down and she spends 20 minutes talking and he's waiting. And after 20 minutes, he's like, what'd you have to tell me? I don't remember. What do you mean? He said, you have to tell me something. Yeah, what she had to tell you was that she had to talk to you. And we said that when a man sees the conversation going in this route, we're skipping the whole long conversation. You guys probably remember that, right? Yeah, that was a memorable class. You guys remember the supermarket, right? Supermarket, rain, two kids, cars. You guys remember that? No? Relia? David? Relia remembers it. Yeah? Okay, fine. You probably weren't there. Okay, what? Okay, I think most of the people here don't remember. Daniel, you remember? No, okay. A woman comes to her husband and says, honey, I got to tell you what happened today. So the husband says, I'm going to talk fast, but this usually doesn't go as fast as this. He says, yeah, I'm listening. She says, well, it was raining cats and dogs, and I was taking the kids, and we went to the supermarket. And when we got to the supermarket, I couldn't find parking space. So I went around and around. Finally, I found a spot. It wasn't so close to the store. And you know, the kids in the rain, they weren't feeling so well, so I took the kids. And then as we were driving, my friend came by with her car, and she hung. She asked me if I found parking space. You know, I was running with the kids. I didn't have time to stand and talk to her. But okay, I told her I couldn't find myself. And then we moved forward. We couldn't find the cart. By the time we found the cart, we only found one that the wheels couldn't move so well. And I piled the kids into the cart, and we went into the store, and they were already stopping, and it was so packed in the store. And I couldn't move around the store. And you remember, I went there for the sale. They ended the sale 2 days early. I don't believe. But when I got to the store, you remember the guy who always sets up the milk cartons? So he got a new earring. It's very strange. A guy like him, he got an earring. I don't know what's wrong with him, but it doesn't matter. We were walking through the store, and then I saw, you remember my old friend Chava? So Chava, I haven't seen her in years. I bumped into her. And as I was talking to her cell phone rang. But when her cell phone rang, it was her daughter who said that the babysitter hadn't arrived. She didn't know what to do. And it was so great to talk to her, but she had to run because the babysitter didn't come. She had to leave her cart with all the things. You know how hard it was to walk around the supermarket? The cart wouldn't move, and the kids were all clambering around, and then they made me such a balagan when we got to the cereals. This one wanted that cereal, and that one wanted that cereal. I was in standing there. Listen, what does she want? So we were going, and finally I got the cereal. They were all happy, and then they tried opening the cereal. But anyways, we were going through the store, and it was so hard with that cart, and the kids were drenching wet, and the supermarket was so packed. You know, they always have those sales. Dafka on the days that I have to go, the store is packed. And we were going, you remember that dress that we bought in Eilat? And the store owner said that there's no other dress like that in the country. She said she imported it. There was a woman there with exactly that same dress. I couldn't believe it, and I was so embarrassed. She was wearing the same dress as me. I was wearing the same dress as her, and she also, I saw her blushing. And we were both like, wow, we got to go to the other side of the store. And we continued shopping through the aisles. It was very, very tough, you know, moving with that cart. And the aisles were so packed. And the sales, they weren't even such good sales, I couldn't believe. But when we got to the line, I suddenly remembered I forgot to get the eggs. So I ran back to get the eggs, and then they made me lose my place online. And her husband, yeah? I'm saying this very quick. She's not going to say it this quick. Now, I lost my place in line. Once I lost my place in line, I figured I might as well take more time. I get the other things we need. So I went back through the store, and the kids by then were clambering. They were so hungry. And I never know if it's right to open the packages and give the kids to eat or not give the kids to eat. You know, people look, and they wonder, are you stealing, shoplifting? But the kids were hungry, and they see all the food. And I knew I was going to pay. You know, it's fair to give the kids to eat. But you won't believe it. as we were going the second time around the store, they were switching the signs for the sale. And this time the sale was even worse than the other time. And I asked myself, wait a second, are they going to give me the first price or the second price? I didn't know what to do. And you know, that guy, as he was over there by the checkout counter, that guy I told you about, the guy with the earring, so he was standing there and I hear him talking to his friend. He says he's contemplating going to Machon Meir. I couldn't figure him out. You know, he's putting an earring in his ear, but going to Machon Meir, I don't know which way he's headed. Okay, you guys get the idea? So when she says, I have to tell you something, sometimes what she means is, I have to talk to you. And if you're going to let me talk, so I'll just keep talking. And if you really like your wife, then you got to let her keep talking. Or what you could do is shift the conversation. She doesn't care what you talk about. So you could tell her about your day. Or you could shift the conversation to something that's important to you. Because what she's saying is, I like you, I want to talk to you, I want to spend time with you, I want to bond with you. And the way we women bond is that we talk. So let's talk. She doesn't have a purpose in the conversation. Very often the purpose is not to reach an end point. The purpose is to talk, to converse. So we had a whole class on that. We're just doing a review now. So we said we have to recognize this difference in speech. That the speech for men is goal-oriented, for women it expresses a bond. And we have to be cognizant of that and give the time for that. We said that that's part of our responsibility, and we have to have patience for it. We brought the story of the spouses. She called him every day and asked him, what should I wear tonight? What should I cook tonight? And eventually he lost patience. And we said how wrong that is, that really what she's saying is, I want to make you happy. I know what I like cooking. I know what's good for me. But I'm asking you what's good for you because I want to make you happy. I want to put on the clothing that you like. And more often than not, when the husband loses patience, he's in the wrong. A person just has to have proper perspective. He has to recognize where the questions are coming from. We discussed that... Yeah? Right, and very often she doesn't like that. Very often she says, but what do you like? And what she's saying is, I want to wear what you like.
Whatever you wear looks good.
Right, that's the standard husband answer. I don't even notice what you wear. You wear whatever you like. Now that's very frustrating to the woman, because how does a husband express his love to the wife? No, think about it. You're thinking of marriage. How are you going to express your love to your wife? What does the average husband think? Well, I'll try to make a good living. I'll try to be a good husband. I'll help around the house a little bit. I'll deal with the kids. Husbands have all kinds of thoughts how they'll be a good wife, good husband. How does a wife want to be a good wife? So just like husbands have their way of expressing it, and we're not going into that now, one of the ways wives express their love is through their cooking, through the food they prepare, and through their dressing up, and through their conversing. This is her expression of, I love you. We don't have that same form of speech. So to us, it's, you're getting on my nerves. You figure it out yourself. I don't ask you what shoes to wear in the morning. Why are you asking me what shoes to wear in the morning? Right? So it's wrong. We just have to understand the language. We're talking different languages.
I think in that case she looks like if there's an issue. Someone was colorblind, you were told, I've always been told by dates, why are you wearing this and this? I think she'll tell me.
Okay, we discussed lies. We discussed that women's version of truth is different than men's version of truth, and we illustrated that from different examples in Tanakh. Lama zetzachaka Sarah? Why did Sarah laugh? And Sarah says, I didn't laugh. We discussed that by women there's one type of truth, and by men there's a different type of truth, and that we have to respect it and be prepared for it. I'm not encouraging it, but it's a fact of life. We also discussed that there are times when a lie is really the person indicating, I don't have enough autonomy. We discussed that there's a fine balance between intimacy and autonomy. We each want intimacy. We also want our own space. Men, when they discuss the jobs they have or the life they want to lead, are very focused on autonomy. Let me have my space. Let me have my freedom. Let me decide what I want. And even within a marriage, men's focus are always on maintaining that space. Let me have my corner. Let me have my closet. Let me have my space. And women are more focused on intimacy. And they're different needs. So when there's an argument or a fight, so the husband says, let me think about it. Let me have quiet. We'll talk. And the wife says, let's get together. Let's talk about it. And the husband says, haven't we spoken enough? I mean, let's just let's call it a night for a few minutes. And the wife is, it's not enough what you said to me until now. Now you want to leave me? Now you want to walk alone? Now you're not going to talk to me? I didn't say that. All I said was I need a little bit of space, right? Because us men, we want to go back to our cave. We're we need our autonomy. And women, they need their intimacy. And this flares up specifically when there are arguments. But it's also within a marriage, sometimes when one spouse is not telling the truth, what they're really saying is, I have no other way, or I don't think I have another way of attaining my autonomy. So the best way I can do it is by leaving you out. How do I leave you out? It doesn't exist. I lied. Now that's wrong. And if a person finds himself doing that, he has to realize that what he's doing when he's lying is he's basically saying, I want you out of this part of my life. Now you ask a man and he'll say, sure, why not? She has to be a part of everything in my life. That's part of what this fusion of man-woman is supposed to teach us. How to connect. Us men have a problem with that. Meaning, ask any man within marriage, and if he'll be honest, he has areas of his life that his wife is not a part of. A true connection is a connection that can go through everything that is a person. This brought us to another discussion of respecting one another. Very often we have fears, we have parts of our personality that we don't want to share with anyone, and when we try to share them, we don't feel like they're appreciated. And the greatest fear is if I share it, then they won't respect me, they won't like me, or they'll even mock it. And we have to know that it goes both ways. And if we can, it's beautiful. If we can share it and respect it and connect, because that gives us potential for a greater connection, a connection that encompasses all of who we are. We had a whole series really discussing the importance of compliments, that the compliment is the greatest binder. When you show appreciation, when you can compliment, then you are really connecting to the person. And by the same token, rebuke causes the greatest distance. So the standard answer to that is, but it's true. She is wrong. It's not personal. It's very personal. There's no such thing as it's not personal. Even it could be true, it could be 100% right. She did burn the chicken. She did leave the chilled on the fire when you asked her not to, and it got all burned. This is the 15th time it's happening. There could be a million things. At the end of the day, that's not the point. Anytime you rebuke, you have to recognize that that's equivalent with saying, now I want you distant from me. It's worth it for me to hurt your feelings to get my point across. So people say, but it's not personal, it's just logical. It's not that way, and we're all that way. I know I should stop smoking, but I don't need you to tell me that 15 times a day. I know I should lose weight. I don't need you to tell me that 15 times a day. I know I should call my mother more than once a month, but I don't need you to tell me that 15 times a day. I know I should get off the phone with my mother from talking to her 15 times a day, but I don't need you to tell me that. The question of right and wrong doesn't even come up, because we have to first recognize that the mere fact that I am chastising, rebuking, commenting, I'm already distancing myself from the other party. And the answer, but I'm right, does not legitimize that. The question is, should you? And did you even think about what to say and how to say it? And by contradistinction, compliments are what bring us together. The show of appreciation, the connection, that's what's really going to bring us together. And the person has to invest thought and an effort to compliment. We discussed the difference between compliment and commiseration, and that people sometimes don't know how to discern between the two. People sometimes commiserate when they should compliment. People sometimes compliment when they should commiserate. And sometimes you have to know which is when. We also discussed that when women come to us with a problem, so we automatically think we have to give a solution, when sometimes all they want is appreciation and commiseration. Oh, it's so hard, I have to wash the floor tonight and put up the chicken. So the husband that hears that automatically says, okay, I'll wash the floor. That's not what she wanted. She wanted you to appreciate. Yes, it is hard. You're doing a tremendous amount. Show appreciation. Show commiseration. Yeah, it must be so tough. And you got so much work and you got so little sleep last night and you're doing so much. It's a balance. We have to know. But we also have to walk away from that male tendency of being Mr. Fix-It or that knight in shining armor. You come to me with a problem, so I'll fix it. I'll tell you what the solution is. One of women's greatest peeves with men is that they always think they have an answer, or they always think they have to give an answer. All I did was I told them, I don't know how I'm going to finish this term paper. So what does he say? Well, why don't you try getting more sleep at night, getting to work early in the morning? He gives me a whole lecture on how to set up my life. So you ask the guy, he says, well, what do you mean? You said you don't know how you're going to finish the term paper. Ask the girl, she says, did I ask you to tell me how to finish the term paper? I was complaining. I was expressing how I feel. I wanted to share with you how I feel, and I wanted you to show appreciation for how I feel. I didn't ask you for a solution. Two different ways of talking. Men, if you told me you have a problem, then obviously you wanted a solution. Women, if I told you I have a problem, I wanted to share with you that I have a problem. I wanted to share with you how I feel. So you should be a part of how I feel and show that you're a part of it. Guy calls up his friend and says, I got a tremendous problem with my computer. I don't know, I tried formatting it and everything's all slowly and working slow and I don't know how to fix it. His friend says, sorry, I don't know anything about computers. Wife overhears the conversation and says, he didn't ask you to fix his computer. He says he has a problem. Tell him you care. You're sorry you can't help him. You feel bad for him. True conversation overheard last week. So I had to smile when I heard this. Because what did the guy say? The guy assumed if his friend was sharing with him the problem, then obviously he wanted a solution. So he said, I don't have a solution for you. End of conversation. What did the wife hear? The guy shared with you the problem. He wanted your commiseration. Tell him you feel bad for him. You're sorry. You wish you could help him. So that's how a woman answers the question. It's a very important difference between men and women. Greatness within marriage, we said, when we measure a person in Judaism, we measure him not only by his external achievements, but we first measure him by his achievements at home. We don't measure a person by the fact that he built the Empire State Building. We first ask, how was his home? How was he to his children, to his wife, to his fellow men? And when we admire a person for his greatness out of his home, it's only because we first see greatness in the home. Greatness begins in the home. And we said that Mordechai is described as being a great leader, a great rabbi, a great sage. And how does the Megillah end? Doresh tov la'amo, v'dover shalom lechol zar'o. He made peace for his family. After all the greatness that he did, he saved the Jewish people, he saved the Jewish nation. He was one of the men in the great assembly. He was on the greatest court. And yet, the greatest praise of Moshe, of Mordechai is, Dover Shalom Nechol Zaro, he speaks peace for his family. Bezrat Hashem, we should all merit to build beautiful homes and homes where the Shechina is found constantly.